Paul Tonko, over the years, I have asked you many times whether the Democrats would win in the next election. And you always say, yes, they will. And a lot of the time, they don't. So now there are those people who think, based on what we just went through, the so-called, you know, by-elections, that where lots of Republicans got wiped out, there are people who think that it's possible the House of Representatives may go Democratic. What do you think?
Well, I think there's at least two dozen seats out there across the country that Hillary Clinton won in her presidential run, and that could easily support a Democrat for Congress because, you know, the effort, her stated platform was far different than that of President Trump, where she was talking about building an innovation economy, investing in research, growing jobs in a way that reflects the education and apprenticeship networking that we need to do, and to have fairness in tax policy. You know, I think we put that in contrast with where the House went, at least with its version of healthcare reform and now tax cut reform, as they call it. I would deny that word reform is part of this. It's an outright tax cut for millionaires, billionaires, and corporations. So there is a contrast in what the parties stand for, how they would approach some of these challenges that face modern-day America. And I think it's believable, it's conceivable that we could capture those two dozen seats, which brings us toward the, you know, brings us to the gavel.
Let me ask you something. A lot of people who, when the Republicans try to mount the congressional campaign, they always talk about Nancy Pelosi, mm-hmm. obviously thinking that, you know, she's not that well-liked in the country. But every time I talk to a Democratic congressman, and there are many of them we talk to here, including yourself, people say only good things about Nancy Pelosi. Are they making a mistake in not jettisoning somebody who is unpopular?
I think what you have is a situation where no matter who is serving in that role as minority leader, head of the caucus, the opposing party will demonize. They'll come up with some strategy that, you know, tries to morph us into that situation where we're responding to that leader and not to our district. And I think that she's under attack because of that. And I think some of it is perhaps gender-based, but I have to say that she serves as a very sound leader, one who has facilitated a lot of coming together. And since the election last year, I would suggest, and I have three other terms to base that on, four other terms to base that on, I think it's probably the most united the Democratic caucus has been in the time I've been in Washington, and for good reason, because we're abandoning the middle class here in small business, which should be our primary concern, whether it's tax policy or energy policy, research, healthcare, to abandon the middle class and to go forth with tax incentives that provide relief for millionaires and billionaires and corporations, I don't think sells across America or won't in 2018.
Paul Tonko, I know you're extraordinarily concerned about the opioid mm-hmm. crisis in America. I'm going to ask you this. Everybody says they're opposed to it, but, you know, is there a way to get this thing taken care of?
There is. I think that obviously there's a lot of effort being made in terms of pain management. Oftentimes, the gateway for people has been, you know, surgery or some chronic condition where opiates have been prescribed for pain purposes. I think there's a much better focus now and awareness of the addiction, the crisis out there, the epidemic that we have. We need to understand that this is a health crisis. When we're 4.4% of the world population and consume 80% of the world's illicit drugs, we have a crisis. So what I've been trying to do as As someone involved in the healthcare area with energy and commerce, including that healthcare issue under its umbrella, is to provide for more service. So when you have that moment of clarity as someone struggling with a substance use disorder, when you're having that moment of clarity, the services need to be there, and they're simply not. And so what I did in working in a bipartisan way with a representative from Indiana, Dr. Bouchon, who he and I together raised the cap. There was an artificial cap of 100 people that could be seen by an individual doctor. We not only raised that cap to 275, and that's been approved by legislation, but we also extended the service provider community from simply doctors to nurse practitioners and physician's assistants with the appropriate training and certification. I have further legislation that that's in the works now that would add nurse midwives and nurse anesthetists and various specialty fields within nursing. I think that's important because in the case of a midwife, nurse midwife, he would be able to address pregnant women and postpartum women who may be struggling with the illness of substance use disorder. And, you know, the addiction out there issue should be seen as an illness, a disease, if we're going to conquer this.
Let me give you one more in a different place. There's been great criticism of the way in which the Puerto Rican recovery has been done since the great hurricanes. And have you been down there, number one? And number two, what do you think we ought to be doing?
I haven't been down there, but we've had a number of hearings. And I think that we needed better leadership to make certain that we responded quickly and more effectively.
That's a shot at President Trump, right? We needed better leadership.
Well, I think he could have coordinated this better. There was a lot of concern about, you know, a second-rate treatment. I've talked to individuals like representatives from healthcare who work there, who had some 68,000 in round numbers Puerto Rican individuals who are in need of radiation treatments for their cancer and not getting the equipment, the radiation equipment, and the generators there quickly enough. You know, it seemed like there should have been a better strategy because this was a unique situation. I'll grant them that. You're serving an island in the midst of not only one storm, but two storms with Irma and Maria, on top of a failing economy, which might have been inspired somewhat by federal action. So there were special needs there that should have prompted the response and the process of that response in a different manner. So we're going to continue to hold these hearings and review it as to how it's moving along. But we've been weeks beyond this effect, and there are still people, probably the greater half of people in Puerto Rico, without electric service. I've had stories and photos shared by members of families who have family members in Puerto Rico, where wash machines are on the ground with a generator on the pickup truck, and they're emptying into streams. And downstream, you have people drinking and bathing with that water. A public health crisis in the making, if not already there. So there's a dire need for us to move quickly and to have a very sound approach. Let me just also make mention that as a member of Energy and Commerce, when we had Secretary Perry from DOE, the Department of Energy, before the committee, I wanted to know if we're just going to rebuild, reinitiate the power supplies, or are we going to do this with state-of-the-art? And I think we should incorporate both. There would be a great opportunity for an island territory to be able to be addressed with state-of-the-art response, with distributed generation, with microgrids, with renewables solar and wind on Puerto Rico as an island would be ideal. So let's build back in a way that is state-of-the-art rather than restoring power with a system that is going to fail them eventually again.
Always wonderful to talk to my friend, Representative Paul Tonko, Democrat of New York's 20th District. Paul, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Always love having you here.
Thank you.